Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, 380,000 people in Ireland suffered at some point from this medical condition. Every 4 minutes, a person visits the emergency department because of it. And while it can't be cured, it is the most common chronic disease children will experience here. I'm talking about asthma, and I'm joined now by Professor Marcus Butler, who's respiratory consultant at St Vincent's Hospital and medical director of the Asthma Society of Ireland. And you're very welcome. Good to see you back with us again.
Thank you.
People are sending their questions in, but I'm inviting them to continue to do so. 51551. So we'll start with the basics. Tell us what asthma is and what the symptoms are.
So asthma is a condition that affects the patient variably over time, coming and going. The symptoms are cough and breathlessness and wheeze and chest tightness. And it's due to inhaling various particles that that particular patient is too sensitive to. They're often allergens or microbes like viruses or pollutants in the atmosphere. And they cause the lining of the inner windpipes to swell, as well as tightening of the muscle layer that surrounds those windpipes and an overproduction of mucus. And all of that narrows the remaining space inside those tubes for breathing to happen. So patients typically get into significant breathing difficulties at times.
And is it hard to diagnose, Marcus?
It's very obvious to an asthma doctor like myself, I guess, that where asthma is present. And yet getting that patient then to have positive tests for asthma is surprisingly difficult at times. So the tests are not always positive when we do them. And that's a limitation we have in the field of asthma. But with a sufficiently convincing story of triggers that cause the condition to come and go, and with some documentation at some stage of variable airflow through breathing tests over time, we can arrive at a confident diagnosis as well as excluding other conditions.
And it's very common here. Is there a reason for that?
It's very common in this part of the world. It's actually even more common across the water in the UK, extremely common in Australia and the US. We think that the immune system has evolved somewhat over time to not be able to tolerate exposure to the cleaner world that we live in compared to, say, 200 years ago. So we saw a rise in the rate of asthma globally in the latter half of the last century. And it's kind of leveled off. And a lot of developed countries, it's actually maybe mildly reducing in some analyses, whereas in developing countries, the rate of asthma is still skyrocketing and rising.
Mm-hmm. And does it emerge in your system as a child and maybe not diagnosed until later, or can it come at any time of your life?
It can come at any time in life. But as you've rightly touched on, most people, when they conjure up an image of asthma, they think of a child with asthma who might grow out of the asthma. And that does certainly happen. A very hot topic right now in the world of asthma is remission, where the disease seems to disappear for, say, more than 12 months. And that rate of occurrence happens between 2 and 52% of asthma patients. And it's more common for that remission, that long-term clearing up of the condition, to happen in childhood onset than in adult onset asthma.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about inhalers now, the treatment. Sure. The brown one, the blue one, sometimes you see a white one. Tell us how to use them.
So, what you've said there is actually the historical approach to inhalers that would have being the way that asthma was treated for decades and decades. And we're really moving away from the blue and the brown concept towards really emphasising the brown, emphasising the importance of the gentle, mild steroid-containing inhaler, and recognising that when the blue inhalers, these relievers that open windpipe muscle, are being needed too much, it's a sign of dangerous swelling of the inner windpipes. And the blue inhalers are not capable of changing the prognosis of the patient for the better. In other words, patients can die from asthma, tragically. And those deaths are more likely to happen in patients who rely on just using blue inhalers. Patients like blue inhalers because when they use them, they quickly get relief of their breathlessness and can construe that to mean I've dealt with the condition. But in fact, it's just dilating the airway muscle. And I tell patients it's like taking a painkiller for a pain caused by a far more serious disease. And you shouldn't leave it at that when you get some transient improvement from the use of a blue inhaler.
So what you want people to do is continuously treat the asthma so that you don't need the blue inhaler as much.
Yeah, our advice and guidelines are, and the evidence scientifically is evolving over time, and we're just placing a far greater emphasis on the use of the preventer medication. It need not necessarily be every day for every person with asthma, but for the vast majority of people with bothersome asthma, we recommend taking the daily steroid-containing inhaler every day.
The low dose
all
one.
Year. At a low dose, and this avoids exposure to tablet steroids, which are the enemy. They're a necessary evil. We have to use steroid tablets tablets to save lives. It's that they're the really potent, effective treatment, but repeatedly used over time in patients year in, year out, they take the biggest toll on a patient's body in terms of side effects. Mm-hmm. And there's a night and day difference between the side effects of gentle steroid inhaler compared to the often devastating side effects later in life of tablet-containing steroids.
Now, if somebody has an outbreak, a problem moment with asthma, and they use their blue inhaler and they sort it out, you want them to go and be checked out after that. You don't want them to make a sigh of relief and carry on.
That's my message is for patients to see the use of that blue inhaler as an indicator that something has to be done to address the underlying disease. Mm-hmm. It's insufficient to look after it with a blue inhaler.
And the risk is, if you don't go and seek advice, what could happen?
So by not seeking advice, you can continue on your usual way of getting intermittent symptoms that intrude into your quality of life. And you risk the roulette phenomenon of asthma, where you don't know how bad the next attack might be. And while most attacks are nuisance level, a smaller number are more serious and a tiny number are fatal. And you run the risk of all of that when you don't take a preventer treatment correctly.
Mm-hmm. And should preventer be treatment be used if you are in remission, as you mentioned earlier, someone who hasn't had a symptom for 12 months, do you still want them using the preventer?
I can tell you that there isn't a single asthma expert in the world who knows the answer to that question about remission, especially in adulthood asthma. So that's a hot area for discussion now, to see, can we use treatments in the future to keep people in remission, to maintain remission of asthma? So that's where the next phase of asthma research is going to go.
Let's get to some of the questions that are coming in. If you have mild asthma or you feel your symptoms have gone, do you still need your brown inhaler? Well, we've just talked about
that. So this is the
question.
Yeah, in remission in childhood, certainly a lot of people can grow out of it. So if their symptoms disappear for over a year, they're in remission. They can be left and to see what happens. But a substantial minority of those children actually have a return of asthma later in life. So a childhood asthma, that patient, that child should be educated that later in life they should be very suspicious of asthma if they get chesty again as asthma recurring.
This from a listener who says, my daughter, who is 11 years old, has exercise-induced asthma. Should she use her blue inhaler before she starts exercise or wait until she's out of breath and then uses it? She does use the brown one morning and at night.
I'm delighted to hear she's using her brown one morning and night. That's the most important advice. And then the use of the blue inhaler will depend on what her exercise level is, how intense her exercise is, how competitive it is, for example. But often patients can just wait until they experience some unusual breathlessness that doesn't tend to happen with exercise and take their blue inhaler if that happens. Whereas if they frequently find that most times they exercise, they get tightness in their chest or breathlessness that limits their exercise, often when they're cooling down actually afterwards, they can pre-medicate 15 to 20 minutes before the exercise. Say as they're getting changed, getting ready for that sport with perhaps two puffs, for example, of an inhaler for an 11, 12 year old child.
Okay,
of the blue inhaler.
This listener, again, with reference to children, would like to know about using the spacer to take inhaler. How important is that for children?
So it's very important. Now, I'm not a paediatrician, and you actually can get paediatric asthma specialists, but the advice is very well understood by all of us. So spacers are particularly important in children who cannot coordinate the use of an inhaler. Because when you use an inhaler, you have to have emptied your lung of all of the air in your lungs by breathing out, much more than you'd normally exhale, and then inhale with the drug going into your lungs as you press the inhaler and sucking that drug deep down into the lungs. And to ask a child for that, of course, is not practical. So instead, we let them breathe in their normal way, but attach loosely this contraption to their face and deliver the drug through the tubing, through the mask, and the child breathes it unaware that the drug is being is contained in that air.
So there's more of a chance of it going in if you do that.
It definitely will go in. If the mask is planted firmly on the face with no air leak and the child is just left to breathe five or six times, taking their regular breaths, they're getting the dose of the drug correctly.
Okay. My 9-year-old is recently experiencing problems breathing when playing sport. He can't catch his breath. His heart is racing. He said he sometimes feels weak. However, he does not have a wheeze. His dad and brother have mild asthma, but they both have a wheeze with it. He's extremely competitive, so I'm not sure if it's just anxiety to win. But if it's asthma, do you always have a wheeze that goes with it? So what do you expect?
I would say that my number one suspicion for that child would indeed be asthma. And wheeze is not a constant in any patient with asthma. It's often, there are many, many people who don't have their asthma diagnosed because they come in and the first thing they say to their doctors, but I don't have wheeze, so I know I don't have asthma. And that's a mistake. because it can be any of the symptoms of cough or breathlessness or wheeze or chest tightness.
Okay, now we have a question about asthma and COVID. I know a lot of people will wonder about this. So this person who's listening says, I was a very well-controlled asthmatic until I got COVID. I had 6 rounds of antibiotics last year. I'm back on inhalers since last October. I'm trying to wean myself off those. I've weaned myself off the blue. I'm now trying to wean myself off the brown. And you might have advice on that. But they're a singer, so it's a big issue. I'm still getting a cough every 2 to 3 days. So in general terms, what are you seeing? People who had COVID and asthma, how is that working?
So we now know at this stage in the pandemic, with all of the scientific data that's came back, is that COVID-19 behaves as a virus that triggers asthma. We've always known viruses trigger asthma, and COVID is a particularly potent viral trigger. And we also know that most people who have asthma will not have a worse COVID-related COVID illness because they have asthma. But there is a minority of patients with asthma who will have a worse and more serious COVID illness, for whom, for example, we really push for vaccination. And we even consider using an antiviral in an elderly patient who has asthma, who is prone to needing steroid tablets to treat flare-ups more than once a year. Mm-hmm. Because we know that that predicts a group that run into higher rates of COVID-related harms. But COVID itself, for most people with asthma, just triggers their asthma and makes it unstable. And that highlights the need to stay on preventer medication against steroid-containing gentle steroid inhalers.
Should this person stay on that preventer inhaler?
They should make sure that their asthma diagnosis has been objectively verified, because some people will have a once-off episode of prolonged viral coughing from a virus. But if there's repeated tendency for the symptoms to return, coming and going, as I said at the start of the interview, that's the feature that gives away the presence of asthma, as opposed to a one-way path towards resolution from a previous one-off viral illness.
Have you ever seen that COVID has provoked asthma in somebody who might
Absolutely.
Have had it before?
Well, asthma is an inherent tendency for the airways to become inflamed, and it takes an inciting event. We call it a trigger to set it off. And for many people, their first trigger has been COVID-19. They didn't realise they had asthma until COVID-19 was the virus that set it off. But because of our fixation, understandably, after all the hell we've gone through in the last few years with COVID-19, it can be thought of too much as being just the COVID disease. But we now know it, in fact, triggers asthma as well.
So if you suspect you developed asthma after having COVID, you might just be right.
Absolutely. And you should talk to your doctor about getting the breathing test that I've talked about and an asthma action plan. A written asthma action plan is one of the key defences against the greatest harms from asthma, including asthma death. It educates a patient to take the right action at the right time to improve their outlook with the correct use of their asthma medications.
Can you get that working with your GP, or do you
have to go
further?
Working with your GP, your practice nurse who's educated about this as well, would be often the best source of information. The Asthma Society of Ireland has a WhatsApp number. It also has a callback service where you'll get an asthma expert nurse who can then give you direct advice in how to access and use an action plan.
We've been talking a lot about vaping on this programme. And yesterday we had a doctor on from the HSE, Dr. Paul Kavanagh. He's written to all of the schools because he's getting a lot of queries from parents and from teachers about young people vaping. Are you concerned about it?
Extremely concerned. I don't think there's a respiratory specialist who isn't concerned about young people and children being exposed to vaping. The marketing strategy is really aggressive, as we all know, with the way these are coloured and labelled and available. They're not intended primarily for the elderly, lifelong smoker who is going to have a few years left of marketing for that company. They want to get young recruits. That's their main modus operandi. And we know that vaping is not good for asthma. It's just like air pollution. It irritates and upsets asthma. So it can't be a good thing for a patient with asthma. And we don't know the other long-term harms. And I tell people who vape, especially young people, that they are participating in one of the greatest experiments in humans on the planet, where we will see in many years' time what the outcome of this experiment is. It's not an experiment I'd sign up for.
So you're seeing young people coming to you with respiratory problems who vape?
Absolutely. Vaping in an asthma patient is a very common thing that I see in young people who come to me. So I see patients from 16 onwards, and often there are vapor histories for those patients. And they've often worked out themselves that vaping upsets their asthma. Mm-hmm. And have taken the correct action to try and get off it. The huge tragedy is that it's such an addictive substance. The amount of nicotine in these vapes is often way higher than you get in pharmacy-based nicotine replacement services to try and help you wean off nicotine.
And we hear that a fifth of young people who vape go on to smoke cigarettes, which is another concern. Now, in your role with the Asthma Society, I know you have issues with how the HSE classifies asthma.
Yes, for many, many years, the Asthma Society is lobbying for financial assistance for patients to make the right choices with their asthma medicines. We've talked at length in this interview about the use of the blue inhaler being an over-reliance that leads to bad outcomes. The problem is the blue inhaler is the cheapest.
Okay.
And 45% of people who have asthma in a survey of over 1,000 patients interviewed by the Asthma Society said that they've had to forego asthma medications, the correct medications, on the basis of cost during this crisis.
So if you need one, you're going to go for the blue one.
We want help to fund the preventers, the more expensive asthma medications, so that patients are not left oftentimes cruelly spending 70 euros or whatever on their asthma medications, and the drug payment scheme only kicks in at 80 euros. So asthma patients are not being helped to make the right medication choices financially. Mm-hmm. And that's a great shame.
Do you get a sense that anyone is listening to that argument?
I'm hoping on the airwaves that the right people are listening who are in a position of power to help make the right decisions. I know the country is awash with money, so this is an opportunity to do the right thing by asthma patients.
All right. Now, I have a question here about whether asthma is hereditary. This listener had severe asthma as a child and it was very tough. And they're wondering if the two-year-old child that they have now is more vulnerable to it, and what should I watch out for?
So there is an inherited component to asthma. So there is a risk for asthma family members that if somebody in the family has asthma, that other members of the family, young kids, can develop asthma, certainly at a higher rate than if there's no family history. So it is a risk factor, unfortunately. But the key thing is to be on the lookout for it. So oftentimes in a small child before the age of 5, they may start to wheeze every time they get a virus. That can be a giveaway that they could be headed for asthma. And they should talk to their doctor, because there's emerging evidence about early use of an inhaled steroid at the time that the patient starts to wheeze, the young child, just taken for up to 10 days perhaps, and that can avoid the need for steroid tablets, and the hope is that it might modify the future incidence of asthma in that patient. But as things stand, we still don't have a treatment that prevents the future development of asthma with 100% reliability.
Marcus, thank you very much. You've given us so much information there, and I hope all of the people who've been in touch with questions got some help. Professor Marcus Butler and the Asthma Society of Ireland has some valuable advice on their website, asthma.ie, and people can go there and check that out. Thank you very much, Marcus, for coming in.
Thank you.
Paul McCartney has been speaking this morning about artificial intelligence, and he has revealed that AI has allowed them to create what he calls the last Beatles record. He was speaking on BBC Radio 4 this morning. He described artificial intelligence as both scary and exciting, and explained what Peter Jackson, he directed the Get Back trilogy, has been able to do using AI.
He was able to extricate John's voice from a ropey little bit of cassette where it had John's voice and a piano. He could separate them with AI. They tell the machine, that's a voice, this is a guitar, lose the guitar. And he did that. So it has great uses. So when we came to make what will be the last Beatles record, it was a demo that John had that we worked on, and we just finished it up. It'll be released this year. We were able to take John's voice and get it pure through this AI, so that then we could mix the record as you would normally do. You know, so it gives you some sort of leeway. So there's a good side to it, and then a scary side. And we'll just have to see where that leads.
Is that good or scary, though, Paul? That's the question. Paul McCartney there on the Beatles' last record, as he says, which will be out later this year. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.